I do want to move on. I want to get into our featured story tonight, which is about Tucker Carlson's interview with the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. And this is a very important narrative. You might not think it's a big deal. You might not think it's a big news story, but it is a really big deal. Because as I've said for the past couple of years, one of the biggest things that is happening in the world and in the United States is that the American public and the world are turning against Israel and maybe turning against organized Jewry as a force. And here's the thing about this show. This is maybe the only show that deals in reality. A lot of people look at my show and they think, oh, that's the Jew show. That's the show where they talk about Jews and they think Jews run everything and that's the flavor of the show. And I reject this. That is how someone who considers themselves to be objective or mainstream might look at it. I look at it almost in reverse. This is the objective and mainstream show where we talk about the fact, okay, the proven fact that organized Jewry controls the West. That's not really controversial. It's not like it's a secret. They're not hiding it. It's just true. Okay, when you look at the TikTok deal, you see their fingerprints all over it. It's Larry Ellison. When you look at the Warner Brothers Paramount acquisition, their fingerprints are all over it. It's not subtle. When you look at Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, Columbia, again, they're all over that. When you look at who propelled Trump into office, almost everything to do with October 7th, the examples like this are countless. CBS, AIPAC, Foreign Aid, you name it, ADL, Trusted Flaggers, censorship, it's all there, okay? Now, the reason that most shows don't talk about this is because there is a infrastructure in place. It's like a racket where anybody that acknowledges this or talks about it, I should say in a bad way, gets utterly destroyed. They get flagged as an anti-Semite, a Jew hater, isolated, neutralized. You talk about this topic, you acknowledge this reality, you express that you're unhappy with this predicament or you're critical of it. Maybe you're just a goy. Jews can talk about it all day. If you're a Jew in Hollywood, you can write in the LA Times, Jews run Hollywood. And they do, and they did. And you can Google that. There's an article like that from 15 years ago. But if you're a goy and you talk about this, big problems. So you know how the story goes. You talk about this, you get destroyed. Consequently, almost no one talks about this. So why am I discussing this? Because one of the biggest developments in the past couple of years is that people are starting to become aware of this predicament that we are in. For many years, there was a silence and omerta around this subject because of censorship, blacklisting, cancel culture, whatever you want to call it. You know what it looks like. You know what it is. And now all of a sudden, everybody is aware. Jews run the West. China runs China. Russia runs Russia. Muslims run Iran. Jews run the West. They run America. They run Europe. And you can't fuck with them because they have all the power. And if you have a problem with them, they destroy you. They use that power to hurt you. And it's only recently that people are becoming hip about AIPAC and Israel's wars and the influence of Mossad and Jewish billionaires and their predilection for their motherland, for the mothership, and the cancellation apparatus, which is a part of it also. Now, how we talk about this issue is almost just as important as the fact that we are talking about it. It's very important, in other words, that we get it right. How do we unring the bell? How do we undo this situation? How do we get to a point where Americans are in control of America? America First patriots are in control of America? Well, we have to identify the problem. And then we have to become conscious of it and organize politically against it. So that's a solution from a very stripped down point of view. Now, to this point, we have this interview between Tucker Carlson and Mike Huckabee. And as you know, Tucker is one of the most prominent critics of Israel. And many people consider him to be a force for the truth and a force for good. He's bringing awareness to the subject. He's driving this conversation forward. He has a massive platform, a lot of credibility coming from Fox News, and he's using that platform to shine a spotlight on this issue. He's talking about it in a very frank way. So people say he's one of the good guys. Now, to that end, he had this interview with the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, and Tucker really put the screws in him. As you may or may not know, Mike Huckabee is a Christian Zionist. So from the point of view of his theology, he is literally a religious zealot. Even though he's a Christian, he worships Israel, worships the modern Jewish state of Israel, worships modern Jews. He believes in a certain interpretation of biblical prophecy. He believes that the people that call themselves Jews today have some special role in the end of the world. And so we basically have to treat them as though they are our betters. And it doesn't matter what they do and what they say and how wicked they are and how much they hate us or take advantage of us. We have to look at them as God's chosen people. And even though we have problems with them now, in the end, the prodigal son, they're going to all come back and they're going to be reconciled and it's all going to be good. And so this is their belief. Now think of it. This is actually a very perverse situation when you consider it. Because the purpose of an ambassador is they're supposed to represent our interests to that other country. We have an ambassador in France. They're supposed to represent American interests in Paris. We have an ambassador to the United Kingdom. They're supposed to represent our interests to that country. But if our ambassador to Israel has a religious idolatry of Israel, well, like, who's this guy working for? Is he working for us or is he working for them? Is his job to represent the interest of Americans to the Jews in Israel? Well, if he's a Christian Zionist and he literally worships the Jews in Israel, I don't know, seems like they're kind of his boss. Seems like they kind of outrank the government here. And so in reality, his job is to represent Israel to us. And you can see that in the way that he talks and the stuff that he does. And this is some of what Tucker highlighted during the interview. This is well known in these circles. If you know anything about Huckabee, he's from the South. He's from Arkansas. He believes in this dispensationalist Christian theology. He's from Fox News like Tucker. And so we know what he's about. Tucker is shining a spotlight on this very perverse situation. It's actually a scandal. And no matter how you cut it, it's deeply wrong and messed up. And you could say that as a first principle, our government represents our interests. And insofar as our constitutionally created representative government hires, nominates ambassadors, secretaries, other personnel, you know, those people, their job is to represent us too. So whether that ambassador is to Israel or anywhere else, his job is to represent our representative constitutional government. It's not an Israel thing. It's not a Jew thing. You could say from a first principle, this is all wrong. Our ambassador to China should represent us. Our ambassador to Japan, Brazil, Mexico should represent us. You don't get some Mexican flag waving Mexican patriot who is still mad about the Mexican war with America to represent us in Mexico City. No, you get an American. Similarly, it follows with Huckabee. So Tucker does this interview to shine a light on this, and he does a pretty good job, I think. He is really putting the screws in Huckabee. The pressure's up. He's asking intense questions. And one of the best parts of the interview is this. We'll talk about some of the good things and some of the bad things. I think the highlight is that Tucker highlighted he highlighted this arrangement in general. But more than that, he highlighted something which is very interesting about Israel. You know, when you talk about Israel, you can't talk about it like any other country. If we were to talk about Germany and Italy and Denmark, right-wing people like to say, well, those are their own countries. They have their own problems. They should defend themselves. NATO should maybe increase their defense budget. If they're so afraid of Russia, they should field their own army. They should make their own tanks and missiles and airplanes and so on. When it comes to Israel, however, and our obligation to defend them, and when it comes to Israel's conduct in war and diplomacy, people like to say, well, they're special, they're different. And what you tend to hear when you talk about this is, well, Israel has this right to exist. That is their go-to. That is literally their playbook. And I'm not making this up. They have a playbook. They literally do market research. How do we deal with these conversations? Who's we? Any Jew. How do pro-Israel Jews deal with these conversations when the goyim ask us, you know, why are we defending you? Why are we fighting your wars? What do we say? Well, the Jews, like a science, they figured out, here's how we short-circuit that discussion. We say, well, does Israel have a right to exist? This is how they shut all that down. You say, Israel's killing civilians. Israel's destroying all their infrastructure. Israel's killing 100,000 plus people. They say, yeah, well, but does Israel have a right to exist? And you kind of go, wait, I don't know. Let me think about that for a moment. Because if you say no, then what are you saying? That Israel should be annihilated? Do you think that they should be genocided and wiped off the map? I don't think anyone supports that. I don't think I should say almost anybody supports that, in America at least. I don't think most people would say, yeah, they should all be annihilated with nuclear bombs. So you go, I don't know if the answer is no. But you also don't want to say yes, because if you say yes, then it's like, now am I involved in a chain of questioning? Clearly, they're not asking that question in good faith. Well, does Israel have a right to exist? Well, I don't really know what that means to affirm that. I mean, does anyone have a right to exist? Do I have a right to exist? What does that entail? I have a right to exist. You're making me nervous. Can I now kill you? Can I slit your throat because I feel uncomfortable? Is my right to exist limitless? Is it not bounded by anything? Like, how do we think about these things? So it's sort of, but now we're thinking about everything else. Whereas we were talking about the genocide and the massacre and all these kinds of things, now we're thinking about this abstract question about natural law. And so they say, does Israel have a right to exist? And you go, I guess. And they go, okay, well, then they have a right to defend themselves, don't they? Palestine doesn't think they have a right to exist. And then you're walking down this path towards, if Israel has a right to exist, then it can defend itself. If it can defend itself, then it can do whatever it thinks is necessary for its security. And maybe that means deporting every Palestinian, and maybe that means killing everybody, and maybe that means a genocide. And they, in a perverted, twisted logic, they get you to this point where you're saying, oh, well, you know, maybe it's okay. Well, Tucker flips that on its head, and Tucker presses Huckabee and says, okay, so he's pressing Huckabee on these questions. What is a Christian Zionist? What is a Zionist? And Huckabee falls back on the old classic. Huckabee says, well, does Israel have a right to exist? I'm a Christian. I'm a Zionist. What is a Zionist? It means Israel has a right to exist. Do you think Israel has a right to exist? And Tucker throws it back on Huckabee, pause, and says, well, what does that mean? Where does this right come from? And now Huckabee is on the back foot and says, oh, well, you know, it comes from international law. And Tucker goes, oh, international law, really interesting. You know, those things that Israel breaks all the time. Funny you mention that, international law. Oh, you mean those things that Israel like breaks constantly since they came into existence? You sure about that? Huckabee goes, well, you know, there's like these conventions and there's the Balfour Declaration and there's this and this. And stumbles all over that answer. And then Huckabee arrives at maybe the more important question, the central question. Huckabee says they have a biblical right to exist. It's a God-given right. Why? Because God told the Jews in the Old Testament, this is all yours. And so that's their promised land. We were promised this land 6 million years ago. So it's ours. Now, we can kill anybody that gets in our way because of that. We were promised this land. Now get the fuck out of the way or we'll kill you. As a matter of fact, we'll kill everybody. We'll kill the whole world because it's ours. Who cares we haven't been here for 2,000 years? We're here to collect. So Huckabee says it's because God promised Abraham this land. Be fruitful and multiply. This land belongs to your descendants. And Tucker points out a problem with this land grant from God. He says, well, you know, actually in the book of Genesis, there is a deed that God gives the Jewish people. And it talks about the specifications of the land. If you say that Israel has their right to exist from God, well, let's talk about God's right that he gave them. Because if you read the fine print, what it says is that Israel is entitled to everything from the Nile River in Egypt all the way to the Euphrates River in Syria. So do they have a right to all of that? If Israel has a right to exist and its right to exist comes from the Old Testament, well, if the Old Testament says their right is good from these two rivers, from the Nile to the Euphrates, then where does it end? Do they have a right to the modern day state of Jordan and Lebanon and Syria and Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Egypt? Because if that's where you're sourcing this land claim, then clearly you would have to say that they do. It's the word of God after all, isn't it? It's the inspired scripture. And this is the story. This is from Politico. It turns out that the Arab countries didn't like the answer. Mike Huckabee says, well, yeah. He says, yeah, they do. Israel does have a right to all of that. Israel has a right to all those countries. And Tucker goes, really? Huckabee goes, well, you know, I don't think they're going to take that. And that's not really what they're talking about now. Tucker says, well, you just said they have a right to it. And now, understandably, almost every Muslim country mentioned in this has condemned the U.S. ambassador to Israel. This is from Politico. It says, quote, pardon me, actually, I have the wrong story up. It says, quote, Arab and Muslim nations condemned comments by the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, who said Israel has a right to much of the Middle East. Huckabee made the comments in an interview with Tucker Carlson that aired on Friday. Carlson said that according to the Bible, the descendants of Abraham would receive land that today would include essentially the entire Middle East, and asked Huckabee if Israel had a right to all of that land. Huckabee replied, quote, it would be fine if they took it all. It would be fine if they took it all, he said. However, Huckabee added that Israel was not looking to expand its territory and has a right to security in the land that it legitimately holds. Really, they're not looking to expand its territory? So what do you call civilian settlements then? What has Israel actually done other than expand since 1948, since 1900, since 1893? What are you talking about? Israel's not looking to expand. Do you mean like that far yet? What do you mean Israel's not looking to expand? That's all it does. That's all they, what did they do in 67, other than expand into Gaza, the West Bank, the Sinai, the Golan? That's all that they do. What do you call a civilian settlement in the West Bank other than expansion? What do you call what they're doing right now in Syria when the Assad regime fell and they blew up all their hardware and then Israel just kept going into the suburbs of Damascus and into the Druze-occupied southern Syria? What do you call that other than expansion? What is it when they're bombing Iran, bombing Iraq, bombing Syria, bombing Yemen? What else would you call that? So he goes, well, they have a right to it, but they're not looking to expand. And the little qualifier that he left off is, well, they're not looking to expand to those places right now. But he's effectively acknowledging if they wanted it, he would defend their claim to it. So what is that? And what does that say about our foreign policy? U.S. foreign policy says and dictates we want stability in the Middle East. What is our end game in the Middle East? Well, considering that there is so much energy there, oil and natural gas, our interest is that that region is stable so that commerce is uninterrupted. Trade routes are uninterrupted in the Red Sea and in the Persian Gulf. We want the Strait of Hormuz clear. We want the Bab el Mandeb and the Suez Canal clear. And we want the oil to flow. And to that end, we want stability. What's more, our real geostrategic interests are now in the Indo-Pacific. Now it matters far more defending the first island chain in the Pacific. The Strait of Malacca is more important now maybe than the Strait of Hormuz. And so we're actually looking to extricate ourselves from that region through collective security arrangements. Same thing in Europe. We want to hand off deterrence against Russia to NATO in Europe. We would like to hand off stability, anti-terrorism in the Middle East to our allies there. And Israel is not our only ally. As a matter of fact, they're not even the most important ally. We're handing off those obligations to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia, to Qatar, Turkey, which is a NATO country. So there are other countries in the Middle East. To the extent that we have an ambassador in Israel, he should be in lockstep with our foreign policy, which is we want to end conflicts. We don't want adventurism. We don't want revanchism, expansion. We don't want revision. We want status quo. And so our end game should be, we want Syria to stabilize. We want Iraq to stabilize. We want those borders to be fixed and defended and permanent. So in other words, if there are people in Israel, and there are, that have designs and aspirations to go to war with all their neighbors and expand their territory, that is against our interests. To go to war in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, wherever else, to dominate the region, that is destabilizing. That is contrary to our interests. For Israel to be unchained, to pursue regional hegemony is destabilizing. That is diametrically opposed to what is best for us and what we want. And yet, our ambassador to Israel seems to have not just Israel's foreign policy, but literally the most expansionist version of it. Think about that. It's not just that Huckabee is gung-ho about taking Gaza and taking the West Bank, which he is. He says, we shouldn't even say Gaza and West Bank. We should say Judea and Samaria. We shouldn't even say Palestinian. That isn't real. So he not only has Israel's foreign policy in the things they're currently doing, he has Israel's foreign policy in all the things their most radical members want to do in a long timeline. In other words, that would be like if Israel's ambassador to the United States was like some manifest destiny nut job like me that wants to invade the entire Western Hemisphere. That's Mike Huckabee. He says, well, they have a right to take Iraq, the Sinai, Egypt, Saudi, Jordan. They have a right to all of that. And I would support them taking it because it's theirs, because God gave it to them, but they're not doing that right now. So why even talk about it? Why talk about it? What are you doing working for us? Isn't that insane that you're an Israeli partisan? You're a Jewish nationalist? And this is the tension. Are you a Jewish nationalist or are you an American nationalist? Because these are two different nations. And when I say Jewish nationalist, do not mistake what I mean. I don't mean Zionist. There is a Jewish nation. It is transnational. Jewish nationality, feelings of peoplehood, feelings of togetherness, this is transnational. And it is not exclusive to Israel. It's not restricted to Israel. As a matter of fact, it's independent of Israel. Feelings of Jewish nationalism, pride in Jewish identity, Jewish culture, Jewish chauvinism, Jewish peoplehood. This exists in the Jewish community worldwide, in America, in Europe, in the Middle East. And these people are loyal to each other. They see themselves as distinct from everybody else, and they see themselves as exceptional, better than everybody else. And they also see themselves as under siege, so they're at war with everybody else, okay? That's a Jewish nationalist. I'm an American nationalist. Where does America come from? America comes from Europe. America's a Christian country. That's our theology. That's our heritage. What are we influenced by? In Washington, D.C., we are influenced by Rome. We are influenced by Greek, by Greece. We're influenced by Greek Hellenistic culture. That's the architecture. That's our constitutional system. That's free speech. That's our separation of powers, checks and balances. It comes from Europe. It comes from Hellenistic culture. It comes from the Roman Empire. It comes from Christianity. And Christianity is its own thing. It's distinct, altogether separate from the Talmud and Jewish mysticism and Zionism and all this kind of stuff. We are our own civilization. I'm an American nationalist. I see the influence of Spain, of Portugal, of England, of France, of the Germans, the Irish, the Roman Empire, the Greeks. I see the influence of this on our civilization. That's the civilization I'm a part of. Jewish nationalists have a different story. Ask Joe Lonsdale. Ask Alex Karp. Ask Bronze Age Pervert. Ask Barry Weiss. Netanyahu. Their story is enmity. Enmity with our people. Their story is about how they defeated the Persians and the Babylonians and the Assyrians. And then the Romans took their land and they hate the Romans that destroyed their temple and kicked them out. And they hate the Catholic monarchs, hate them, hate the Catholic monarchs that try to suppress their religion with the Inquisition, burning their holy books, expelling them. They hate the Tsar, the third Caesar, the Caesar of Russia. They hate the great European empires. They hate the Germans. They hate the Spanish because of Philip II. They hate the French because of Louis XIV. They hate the English because of Edward. They hate the Romans because of Titus. And they hate the church because they see the church as idolatrous. And so when you see a Joe Lonsdale, he's a Maccabean. He's a Hebrew. He's a Jewish nationalist. And he sees Rome as just another in a long line of empires and peoples and nationalities destroyed by the Jews. And isn't that kind of the whole thing? Do you know what goyim actually means? It doesn't really mean cattle. Goyim means the nations, the nationalities. The Jews are a nation up until recently without a state, without a territory, a nation, a people, a tribe, here, there, everywhere, it doesn't matter. And they are exclusive and they are their own. We are a nation. We are the nations. They are the Jews. We are the Goyim. We are the other nations. I'm part of the American nation. The American nation is formed out of other nations, discovered by Italian explorers, Spanish, Portuguese explorers, settled by English settlers, wilderness tamed by the French, the English, the Spanish, built by the Germans, the Irish, yes, the Slavs, the Polish, the Czech, Swedish, Finnish, Norwegian, Russian, okay? And all of our theology, All of our philosophy, our culture, it comes from the Greeks, the Etruscans. It comes from our nations. We are a distinct nation. So Mike Huckabee is on the side of the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation's story, their chauvinism, their exceptionalism, their ambitions for a greater Israel. You know, everybody dreams of a greater whatever, okay? Serbia dreams of a greater Serbia. Russia dreams of a greater Russia. Italy dreams of a greater, you know, they want Slovenia. Serbia wants Kosovo. Russia wants Ukraine. And yes, Israel wants their whole Middle East. Whose fucking side are you on? I want a greater America. I don't care about a greater Israel. As a matter of fact, make Israel as small as possible. Because they are a threat. They're a threat because their Jewish nation reaches into ours. And it doesn't go the other way. The Jewish nation transcends borders. And their people that they count among their ranks are powerful. And they have a vast reach. The Jewish nation reaches into the core of our country, into all of its organs. That's a problem. And they also have their own home base. They also have their own headquarters. That makes them a threat. They've got 300 nuclear bombs. They've got missiles. They've got an intelligence apparatus, and they've got their people everywhere. The Jewish nation reaches into Russia, into Europe, into America. Whose side are you on? You can't be a Jewish nationalist and an American nationalist. You have to pick one. Now, you can be Jewish and be an American nationalist, but that means you need to assimilate. You need to recognize America as your only home. You need to burn the boats. But if you're one of these Jews that has a chip on your shoulder and you're worried about Israel and you're worried about all this other stuff and you talk about how Europeans have anti-Semitism in their DNA, you're not on the team. How could you possibly be America first? And this is our own ambassador. Our own ambassador is not America first. He's not even an American partisan. He's not even part of the American nation. Firmly part of the Jewish nation, advocating for the Jewish nation. And that's not what we are about at all. This is America first. This is what our allies had to say about it in the Middle East. His comments sparked immediate backlash from neighboring Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and the League of Arab States. Saudi Arabia's foreign ministry described the comments as extremist and unacceptable. Egypt's foreign ministry called his comments a blatant violation of international law, saying Israel has no sovereignty over the occupied Palestinian territory or other Arab lands. Huckabee has long opposed the idea of a two-state solution for Israel and the Palestinian people. In an interview last year, he said he does not believe in referring to Arab descendants of people living in British-controlled Palestine as Palestinians. In the latest interview, Carlson pressed Huckabee about his interpretation of Bible verses from the book of Genesis, where he said God promised Abraham and his descendants land from the Nile to the Euphrates. Now, think about it in terms of what is best for us. Like I said, we actually have other allies. Egypt is our ally. Saudi Arabia is our ally. Qatar, the Emirates, Turkey, Armenia. These are our allies. Armenia is a Christian country to boot. What about them? And what about us? What is best for us is that the Middle East is stable. What is best for us is that the militant elements of the Palestinians are pacified so that there can be a two-state solution, and then we can leave. There can be a two-state solution. Israel can make treaties with Saudi Arabia and other countries, and then we can leave. And we can get the oil from Saudi Arabia, and we can get the money in their petrodollar facilities into our economy. And we can focus on other problems. That's what we want. What Israel wants is to take the West Bank and Gaza and then terraform the region. Egypt is mobilizing in the Sinai because they're worried about this, digging tunnels. And Turkey is getting worried. Now they extend their arm into Syria. Saudi Arabia says they won't make a deal unless there's a two-state solution. The Middle East is destabilizing because of Israel's revisionist Zionist ambitions, because of these greater Israel ambitions. And again, our ambassador supports this to the detriment of our own foreign policy. And by the way, this greater Israel thing, it is as Jewish as it gets, and they want it. The revisionist Zionists, going back to the foundations of the state of Israel, revisionist Zionists like Zev Jabotinsky, who founded the Israeli military or elements of it, they believe that Israel should take all of Jordan. They believe that Israel should be as big as possible. The revisionist Zionists, which founded the Likud party, they believe this also. They believe Israel should have the Sinai. They believe Israel should have the Golan, southern Lebanon. They believe they should have the land east of the Jordan River. They believe they should have it all. As a matter of fact, Israel's contemporary ministers in government believe this. Their national security minister and their finance minister, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they both believe in this. They have given speeches in front of podiums that depict a greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. So it's not like this is some conspiracy theory or some fringe view. These are the foundations of the state of Israel. And there are contemporary, powerful political parties in Israel. They either descend from that tradition or they uphold it still. And they believe in this project. And that leads me to this other part about Tucker's interview. You know, everything that we're talking about has to do with the Jewishness of Israel. Suffice to say, Israel's right to exist, where does it come from? The Bible. So Israel's Jewishness is really at stake here. What it is, what that means, is it legitimate, right? Where does the legitimacy of the modern state of China come from? It doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from this diplomatic thought in the 70s because of the result of a civil war in the 40s. Where does the People's Republic of China come from? Well, Mao Zedong won the civil war and eventually the U.S. made a deal. And like, that's where it comes from. Now, on some other level, they have their legitimacy from Confucius and from this idea that they are the Middle Kingdom, they're this 5,000-year-old culture. So there's this legal framework about the current regime, and there's this civilizational framework about their history in this region, around this river, and all the rest of it. It's, you could say, the Chineseness of China. And the same goes for other countries. Where does the sovereignty of a country like the United States come from? Well, the revolution and the constitution and the declaration and this sort of thing. When we're talking about Israel's right to exist and why we have to defend them, and excuse me, my nose is itching, what makes them special? It has to do with the Bible. As we just laid out, where does that claim come from? Well, they say that the God of the Bible gave them the land. And even though they weren't living there for 2,000 years, they came back to collect on that. They got kicked out by the Romans, and so they lived in exile as a diaspora for 2,000 years, and now they're coming back. And what legitimized this return to their land? The Bible. So, at stake here is really that claim. If they're coming back to Israel, if they're coming back to this territory and claiming it, well, the question is, what does the Bible actually say? And about who and what people? And this is the part of Tucker's interview that I did not like at all. And I've heard this said a lot in this same conversation. People like to say, well, if Israel's right to exist is built upon this biblical claim, they want to attack the continuity of this biblical people. So if Israel has this right to exist because God told Abraham, your descendants get this territory, and people claiming to be Jews from Central and Eastern Europe came there in 1900 to make good on this. Well, some people like to attack the continuity, the through line. And they like to say, well, are the modern Jews really those descendants of Abraham? In other words, are they really the beneficiary of that land grant? We might say, in ancient history, God gave this ancient people this land. Well, now some people showed up and they say, we are those people. And guys like Tucker want to say, okay, well, are you really the same guys? Do you have that lineage? If you do, well, then I guess we have to litigate that. But if you don't, then you have no claim. Maybe you're some kind of interloper. And maybe somewhere along the way, some other people wanted to hijack this and get in the middle of that process and say, well, we have this heritage, we're claiming it, and we're claiming the land that comes with it. And so in the same interview, and sort of along, you can maybe see the continuity here, along exactly the same line where Tucker says, where does Israel get its right to exist? What is that right? Tucker also questions the continuity of the Jewish people. And he says to Huckabee that all the Jews in Israel are Ashkenazi, and the Ashkenazi come from Central and Eastern Europe. That's actually what Ashkenazi means. It means German. And Yiddish is a form of German, or it's it branched off of German at one point in time. And so Tucker says the prime minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, is Polish. He's from Eastern Europe. What does he have to do with the Bible? What does he have to do with the people of the book and Abraham? And this is a story from Times of Israel. This is the quote. It says, Carlson also questioned whether modern Jews were the same nation as Jews in the biblical era. Carlson said, quote, God promised this land from modern day Iraq to modern day Egypt to this people, the Jews, Abraham's descendants. Who are his descendants now, and how do we know who they are? He said the current prime minister's ancestors weren't from here. Netanyahu on one side, his family's from Poland. They're from Eastern Europe. So how do we know that he has a connection to the people who God promised the land to? And this I didn't like, because as a matter of fact, let us just say this at the outset, it is a matter of fact that the Jews in Israel descend from the Middle East. The Mizrahi Jews, Sephardic Jews, and Ashkenazi Jews, they all descend from the Middle East. How do we know that, Tucker? Well, if this wasn't a rhetorical question and you actually bothered to ask, we have genetic testing. We do have modern genetic testing, which shows that Ashkenazi Jews have Levantine DNA that goes back 2,500 years to the Middle East. How do we know? There's no way to know. Well, we have science. We have genetic tests. And these people do have Levantine DNA. They did mix with Europeans. They have Eastern European DNA. They have Central European DNA. But they also have Levantine DNA. So these are not a people that are completely separate from Israel. They do have a legitimate claim that they are from the Middle East. So to pretend like we don't know, or that it's even contestable, is not true. And it's almost to the point of a reckless disregard for the truth. It's almost a lie of its own creation, a lie of its own type, to say, we can't possibly know. How do we know? Netanyahu comes from Poland. Okay, and, so what? Anglo-Saxons come from modern-day northern Germany and Denmark. Okay, so what? Yes, people from Poland also came from elsewhere. And some Polish people are native, and some Polish people came from the Middle East. And they are Jews. And to pretend as though we don't know that, to cast aspersions on this, and actually to insinuate that they have no Jewish DNA or that there's no way to know or that we don't know is irresponsible. And honestly, I think it's a lie. To say this as a rhetorical question, asking, how do we know? Netanyahu comes from Poland. It obfuscates the truth. Ashkenazi Jews have been proven scientifically with genetic testing to be descended from the Middle East, to be Levantine, to be Jews. So what are you really getting at here? Don't play dumb and stop asking rhetorical questions. They are Jewish and we know they're Jewish. And this is something that I see all the time now. There's all sorts of different narratives coming from different places. Some anti-Zionist Jews or anti-Zionist leftists will use this argument. I see Muslims make this argument. They say these people in Israel are Europeans. They say it like it's a bad thing. They say Netanyahu's Polish. He's not a real Jew. Now, how do they characterize Israel? They characterize Israel as another white supremacist colony. That's where that goes. It's Muslim third worldists, leftists. And how they characterize this with that narrative is they say that Israel is just another example of white supremacist colonialism. They think we don't know any better. They say that Muslim, indigenous brown people are being displaced by whites from Europe. And their Judaism, well, that's just an elaborate facade for age-old white supremacy. And they think they're tricking everybody. That's that narrative. And I see this all day long. They say, those aren't real Jews. Those are Europeans. And what does this do other than serve to vilify white people? Huh? What does that actually do other than blame white people for what Jews are doing? Netanyahu is a Jew. Epstein is a Jew. Okay? Adelson, Ronald Lauder, these are Jews. They're visibly Jewish. They have Jewish lineage, Jewish DNA, and they are part of the Jewish nation. And to suddenly say, oh, no, no, they're Polish, they're German. Now you're just blaming white people. And this is a way of maybe offloading the guilt onto a people we're more comfortable blaming. Haven't white people been blamed for enough of the world's problems? It's sort of like when conservatives used to love blaming white liberals for everything. BLM rioting? No, no, that's not black people looting the liquor store. That's white liberals pretending to be black. Remember that one? Because we're not comfortable blaming black people for problems. Only white people are ever the problem. Oh, you want to know who really runs the world? It's rich white people. Yeah, it's rich white liberals like Bill Gates. Because we're more comfortable blaming our own kind, our own rich people, our own women, our own young people. Yeah, blame the white college students, blame the white women, blame the wealthy white people, blame the white hipsters or hippies. What does that serve to do other than offload guilt from one ethnic minority to white people yet again? For leftists, for third worldists, for Muslims who can say Israel is a creation of the British Empire. It's a remnant of Sykes-Picot. It's a remnant of the old days of European colonialism. That's all that does. And I don't like that. Netanyahu's not a white guy. Netanyahu's a Jew. Okay? That's one. Now, I hear this other narrative all the time that they're Khazarian. You hear this one? Everybody says, you know, it's really red-pilled. They're not really Jewish. They say that in the Middle Ages, the Khazarian Turks from the Central Asian steppe invaded Europe, and then they became Jewish. Why did they do this? To what end? Who knows? How this happened without being recorded in history? Anybody's guess. There's no rigor here. Nothing matters. Somewhere along the way in the Middle Ages, some Turkic mountaineers, some Turkic riders, horsemen from Central Asia, came here, put down roots, and became Jewish. And so they're trans-Jewish. They're like transgenders. Now they're Jewish. And for whatever reason, they were just some minority in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth and then got kicked around a bunch and then, I guess, deluded themselves into thinking they're Jewish and decided to create Zionism. I don't even know what the idea is there. But that's the big idea, is that there was a break in the continuity, that somewhere along the way in the Middle Ages, some other people identified as Jewish, and the modern Jews are sort of a construction, a modern construction. And some other group of people engaged in constructivism and said, well, we're Jewish now. We have the Jewish identity. Now we're Israelis. And some people say, no, the really red-pilled thing is that this is the Khazarian Empire. This is some obscure Central Asian Turkic kingdom that became Jewish and has just been living the lie for 1,300 years. And now they're in Israel for some reason. I hear this one too. And once again, you have to wonder, what is even the point of that? And then you realize, who is the number one beneficiary of both of these narratives? It's Jews. Who is the number one? If you go out there and say, oh, Netanyahu's not a real Jew. As a matter of fact, none of the Israelis are. Who's the number one beneficiary of that narrative? Well, it would be Orthodox Jews. Maybe the Lubavitchers. It would be some group of Jews who believe that they are the real Jews. And they feel that they are being blamed for what Israel is doing or what Netanyahu is doing. Doesn't that sort of fit neatly? Tucker always likes to say, well, the problem isn't Jews. That's crazy. Don't talk about Jews. That's anti-Semitic. Tucker says the problem is neocons. Forget about Judaism, Jewishness, the Jewish nation, Jewish. No, no, nothing to do with that. He literally sat face to face with me and seriously said that Judaism has nothing to do with Israel. Judaism has nothing to do with neoconservatism. Okay? The problem is neocons. The problem is Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is not even a real Jew. He's Polish. Interesting. And Candace Owens says it's Khazarians. Oh, Israel's an evil state, but Israel's all Khazarians. None of them are real Jews. So who's the beneficiary of this? Well, it's all those Israel-critical Jews, all these Orthodox Jews, conservatives in America, that they don't want to be blamed for what Netanyahu is doing, for what Israel is doing. But this is a lie. Like I said, genetically, these people are Jewish in Israel and Netanyahu too. And maybe more importantly, everything that Israel is doing, it doesn't come from, people say it's these Frankists. This doesn't come from Jacob Frank. This doesn't come from the Central Asian steppe, and it doesn't come from Poland. You know where this idea comes from, that they have greater Israel? It comes from the Hebrew Bible. You know where this idea comes from, that they're going to wipe out all their enemies? It's the story of Amalek. It comes from the Hebrew Bible. In a word, it comes from Judaism. Where did Jews get the big idea that they can kill everybody that is an idolater? It comes from their Talmud. It comes from their fucking holy book. You don't need to invent some esoteric satanic cult. You don't need to invent some interloping other ethnicity. This is who they are. They have the lineage to the original Jews who rejected and killed Christ, who were corrupted, who rejected their own Messiah, and were punished for it by being kicked out of their temple and their land. And all of these perverted ideas, well, that's just the Hebrew Bible without Christ. That's just the law without Christ. That's the Pharisees without Christ. That's where they get the idea that everybody that stands in their way should not be shown mercy or love. That's where they get the idea that they're going to wipe out the women and the children in pursuit of their birthright, in pursuit of their land. It comes from Judaism itself, this perverse bastard religion that did not accept the Messiah. That's what Judaism is. It is a bastard religion. The Hebrew Bible had its fulfillment in Christ. That's what it is. That's who the prophets were. That's what the mark was on the doors in Egypt. That's what it's all pointing towards. That's what it was all for. That's what they paved the way to have in the end, from Adam and Eve, through Noah, through Abraham, through Moses, David, Solomon, all the way through to Christ. And now it's done. What exists now, what they call Judaism, halakhic, what they call the law, the Talmud, is a bastardization. It's effectively a form of a heresy. So who are we trying to protect when we say it's not those real Jews? I'm sorry, what's a real Jew? The Pharisees that put him on the cross, that's a real Jew. We're supposed to be okay with that? No, no. I see somebody say, Candace Owens said the other day, she goes, God's chosen would never do this. Hey, I have a newsflash for you. It was God's chosen that put him on the cross, genius. What do you think happened there? Calvary, whatever happened there? She goes, God's chosen people would never be this heinous. I'm sorry, did you miss the ending there? Did you fall asleep before the end of the drama of the Gospels? That's the whole story. God's chosen people rejected their own Messiah, their own gift. They traded him for Barabbas. They demanded he be executed and crucified. He was betrayed by his own brother, his own disciple. And then you say, I can't believe they're doing this all the... Well, what do you think happens? 2,000 years without the light of Christ? They've got the Mishnah, they've got their commandments, they've got their traditions, their synagogues, their rabbis, but they don't have their temple. It was taken from them. They don't have the veil, the land. It was taken from them. And they don't have the Logos. They don't have the Christ. They don't have the light of God. So how could it be anything other than corrupted and perverted? And people are trying to go out and say, it's the Polish, it's a white supremacist thing, it's neocons, it's Kazarians. No, this is just these people now persisting. Genetically, they're Jewish. Culturally, they're Jewish. They derive their supremacist ideology, their national feelings, chauvinism from this text. And we have to be very clear about that. No, I'm sorry. We're not going to blame white people for Israel. Not going to happen. And we can't be deluded about the nature of the real issue here. And the reason I say it's an issue, it ties back into Jewish nationalism. When Joe Lonsdale says that young men should look up to Cyrus, the Jewish Messiah, you see this guy has not let go of his Jewish national feelings. When Steve Saylor says that if the Goyim ever found out that Jews were smarter than them, we would come for them with the pitchforks and torches, they have not let go of their Jewish nationalism. Same with Curtis Yarvin and his little lackey. Same with Alex Karp, who's afraid the Christians are going to throw him out of a window. Okay, we have to be realistic about what is going on here. And we can't say that all these people are just Kazarians living a lie, or they're Frankists keeping this dynastic secret that they're a cult. And we can't blame white people for them either, because that's not what it is. So in many ways, the interview is very good. In other ways, the interview is deeply flawed. And this, ironically, or maybe not ironically, is Tucker's contention with me. When you see Tucker calling me an anti-Semite all the time, and when he goes and qualifies everything that he says by saying it has nothing to do with Jews and Judaism and Israel, you know, keep this in mind. They want to keep the conversation on Netanyahu and neocons in Israel, and they don't want to talk about the bigger issue here. It's a story of peoples. It's a story of nations. And these things have a draw on us. Our mythology, our story, our parents, our nationality, it tugs on the heartstrings of men. And so to look at our country, which is being influenced and controlled by Jews, by a Jewish class, you have to look at their affinity for their Jewish nation and stop pretending it's all ideological, looking for, you know, ideas to blame. It's the neocons. It's people that feel a certain way. It's this group. And unless we get a handle on that and we promote a version of Jewish identity that is compatible with America, you know, we're not really addressing the root cause here. And I'm not saying that people can't be Jewish. And I'm not saying that people can't embrace their Jewish identity. But it has to be done in a way with some deference to the country they reside in. And if they can't do it, then they can't have power over us. You want to be a Jewish supremacist? I don't care that much as long as you just live far the fuck away from me and you don't have $50 billion to spend in my elections. That's a problem. And you want to be Jewish and celebrate that and everything? Okay, good for you, but you better put America first. You got to look out for everybody in this country and you got to recognize this is a Christian European country. That goes every way, shape, and form, not just for the immigrants. I see guys like Stephen Miller, they say, oh, you know, these brown people need to assimilate. No, you need to assimilate, you arrogant Jew. You need to assimilate. Stephen Miller, with his Jewish wife and his Jewish kids, and all they talk about is how Jewish they are and they're pro-Israel. And Stephen Miller, people want to give him kudos because he's against brown people and black people, telling them to assimilate. Hey, you first, pal, you arrogant Jew, you assimilate. Then we'll talk about the rest of these people. Here's the difference. Illegal immigrants, they're running a, I don't know, they're running a corner store. You're the deputy chief of staff. So who's really the issue here? People talk about, oh, you know, these immigrants need to assimilate. Hey, I agree with you. But illegal immigrants, okay, they're picking berries. They're on a farm somewhere. Miriam Adelson is spending $100 million per cycle. So where's really the urgency? I mean, it's actually a little bit hard to pick, but the difference is one group seems to have a lot more agency and power, and you can never say this to them. And the other group, people have a field day. So those are the flaws of the interview. And I see this narrative being promoted. Don't be deceived by this. Don't be deceived. They do it with Epstein. They do it with Netanyahu. They want to say Epstein wasn't really Jewish. He's a vampire, cannibal, Kazarian. Netanyahu's Polish. He's a dude from Poland. What is that? That's not true. And I think it's a very deceptive narrative. I wonder who's really behind that because it's being promoted. It's being promoted by Alexander Dugin. It's being promoted by Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Ian Carroll, Ron Unz. I don't like it. And it seems very Russian. That's my feeling. It seems very Russian. Seems like the Orthodox Jews like that little narrative. So Americans need to get hip, okay? We need to get wise, figure out what the real situation is.